Hello, everybody, and welcome to episode number 104 of the Still City Insider podcast. I'm one of your hosts, Jeremy Ritz, alongside the Jim Wexel, and today we have draft legend Roy Countryman joining us once again to talk Steelers draft. And before we get into all that, Jim, how are you? Roy, how are you doing?
Very good, Jeremy. Thanks for asking.
Hey, I'm doing great, guys. I'm grateful to be on here to talk Steelers draft news and prospects here and positional type needs here. Always willing to talk ball.
And viewers out there and listeners, if you're listening, you probably can't see this, but I want to point out that Roy and Jim coordinated Jim's hat color and Roy's background. They got the color coordination going on, so it's a sight to see. But Roy, let's jump right into it. The draft is getting closer by the day. We're almost at mid-April, and let's talk about offensive prospects that the Steelers have their eyes on. And probably the area where there's the most focus is offensive line. And really the discussion is, will the Steelers take a center or a tackle? So if we could, let's talk about prospects at those positions and where you see the team potentially going.
Yeah, Jeremy, for me, it's really going to be a toss up and see how the board breaks down. We have talks now after the big pro day of Michael Penix and even Bo Nix and a lot of these visits with the teams in the top 15. If we get six quarterbacks go off the board, we're going to have a really good player while we're on the clock at number 20. So it's, for me, I always look at the players that cost the most in their second contracts. And if you're going to go off of that in your draft needs here, you're going to probably aim for that tackle first. They've had a number of these guys in. They just had Troy Fatanu down to the south side here yesterday. They've really liked Talise Fuaga, who's the big, mean right tackle from Oregon State. And then we all know Amarius Mims and the freakish athleticism he showed, and former Broderick Jones teammate as well. They brought him in for a pre-draft visit. So there's a lot of guys here that are in the discussion. It's going to be which tackle is going to be available when we're on the clock at 20. And how comfortable are you selecting maybe the fourth or fifth tackle compared to your top center maybe on your board? So what drop-off are you going to see compared to the, you know, maybe second or third round? Because this draft is really deep at both positions, both at tackle and center. This is one of the more deeper classes for both those positions. You're probably going to get a starting caliber player, maybe not immediately, but a starting caliber player into that round two, round three range.
So what's the plan at tackle? I really don't see them moving Dan Moore. I don't see them trading him, not at the last year of his contract, not after all they've already invested in him. What's your plan? What should their plan be? Is it a right tackle if he's one of those special ones like Latham or Fuaga? I don't know if I could resist either one of those two, even though I have no plan. I have no plan for a backup right tackle. Now I need a backup left tackle too, and that might have to be Broderick Jones. So do you ruin Broderick Jones by moving him, or do you do it at the beginning in spring ball? Do you move Broderick Jones over to left tackle and accommodate a rookie, bench the left tackle who can't play right tackle as a swing, And then trade them, which you suggest, Roy. I can't see that. I can't see them getting enough, and I can't see them that answering their problem is at the number three. So what kind of plan are you gonna? It's not like there's a position open.
Yeah, Jim, you make a great point. The one thing that I see here is it depends on the player that they're taking the first round. If it's a guy that started 2+ years at right tackle, they may be a little bit more comfortable getting him acclimated on the job. If you're looking at a guy like Amarius Mims, you're already looking at Dan Moore's going to be your left tackle this year and Broderick's going to be your right. You're not going to start a guy like Mims who only has 8 career starts at the college level immediately in year one. So I think it really depends on the player. If you get a guy like Fuaga, who's a 2+ year starter at right tackle at Oregon State and has a lot of great reps on tape, I think you might see them maybe ease him into action a little bit earlier than a guy like Mims or maybe these guys that are more projection, like even a Tyler Guyton. He's had a year plus starts, but he's really wet behind the ears compared to his early career as a tight end. So if you get a guy that has multiple years of starting experience at the right tackle, It may give them that little bit more comfort, but this is a veteran laden team. We can't really, you know, have a rookie that's only, you know, maybe less than a year in starting experience starting at right tackle immediately. I think you would see Dan Moore stay at left and they commit to Broderick at right, and then we see where it goes from there for next year. But if it's a guy that's had a lot of starts,
that's a pretty high investment for next year, though, isn't it? That's my concern about drafting the tackles. I love some of those big right tackles, but I don't see the plan.
I mean, for a tackle like Mims, though, if I can get him in the first round, the payoff may be, you know, an all pro in the very end. If you let him sit behind him and learn for a year and you still have your two starters already in tow. So it's really where's the drop off that you have compared to your tackle in the second or third round to the guys in this first? Because Mims compared to a third round tackle, there's a lot of disparity there of what their ceiling may be. Maybe not initially. The floor might be a little bit lower, but the ceiling, if you're going for a guy in the first round, you're swinging for the stars and hopefully getting an all pro, you know, and not just the guy that's going to be a baseline starter.
So you got to be in love with this guy.
Yeah, absolutely.
Not just position. And that's where the problems, I think, are at center. Do you really love someone at 20, one of those centers?
For me, I love Graham Barton. I've been going back and forth. I love Jackson Powers Johnson. But Barton just has that workmanlike approach. You can see it. All of his teammates rave about the way he ran that offensive line room there at Duke. He's a smart player. I know some people have some qualms about him transitioning back to center. You know, he played center as a freshman at Duke. He's a smart guy. The only reason he played at left tackle was they're trying to get their best five linemen on there. They had a guy named Jacob Monk, who was a guard and then transitioned to center. It was really getting the best assets out there the whole across the board. So I think Graham Barton, maybe at a different program, would have been a 3-4 year starter at center.
But he wasn't. You know, Pouncey was, and these centers, I mean, we had Trey Essex on 2 weeks ago, mm-hmm. and he said a guy like Barton will probably not be ready. It would be too overwhelming. It's too much, even though he has played center. He says they need a guy who has 3 years starting. If he's going to start as a rookie, and at that position, if they draft a center at 20, you would think that rookie will start.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's
I
for
mean,
me.
Herbig's still viable. Don't get you know. I'm not as down on Herbig as others are, but I would think the center should be ready to go as a rookie early, maybe fifth game or something like that.
Yeah, but even with Herbig, Jim, he doesn't have a whole lot of starting experience at center in the league. So even him transitioning to the starting position, I know he's been our versatile backup, but he hasn't had the reps in the NFL. He may have been behind the scenes doing all the practice reps and whatnot, but he hasn't been in game as the starting center a lot in the NFL. So for me, I just like the combination of the upside and everything, the athleticism that he put on display at the Duke Pro Day. I think Barton is my top center. But if you're going to tell me that you want a guy to step in day one, I want Zach Frazier. You're just mentioning it, 3-year starter, 3-time captain on top of that. I think that even says more than the 3-year starter, plus the heavyweight background as a wrestler, good technician, and he has the strength, I think, that could come in and not be a liability early on. So I think he'd be the guy, if you want the pro ready right now, you're going to go for Zach Frazier as being the guy that could come in and maybe compete to start week one, but Barton may be your higher ceiling prospect at center.
Okay.
So Roy.
Duke Mayfield has, sorry, Jeremy, just one last
yep.
moment. Duke Mayfield, the O-line coach on Twitter,
yep.
he has Frazier as his number one center. I've seen all three of those centers being ranked number one by various people that I respect. So.
Yeah, and Jim, like what we were talking about here, this is a great year with depth. You know, you have those three guys. You have Cedric Van Pran, Granger from Georgia. It's played on two championship teams of Georgia, former teammates with Broderick. Bo Limmer, who's a quality player and then transitioned to guard Arkansas. So you have high-quality centers here that are probably going to be available in the third round.
I want to see Mims in the first round and then Von Pran in the second, and – you know, now you've got four Georgia Bulldogs out of six
hey,
up front, counting the tight end.
Just sprinkle that championship magic on all of us.
Right.
Let's just keep that rolling.
Right. And hopefully they can keep their old buddy Pickens in line in the locker room.
Yep.
Yeah. Good luck with that one. But Roy, just talking about Zach Frazier, so the injury history there, you know, maybe things have changed just in terms of him moving up into that first round. But do you think he's worth the first round selection at 20 for the Steelers, or do you think they would wait?
He's in that range where you're going to have to select him between 25 and 40. And for me, it's, you know, if you're confident you can get him in the early second round, maybe you go up to the first couple picks in the second round to secure your guy. Or maybe this is a player that maybe Mims comes off the board, or a Fatanu or Latham, and you move back, say, to 25, 26 in the draft. You're going to have to get ahead of Buffalo and Tampa Bay for one of these centers. They've showed a lot of interest in the draft here. After Ryan Jensen retired, they only have a guy named Robert Hainsey, who's from Pittsburgh, as their center the last few years. He's actually due for free agency, and they haven't approached him. So Tampa Bay's the team you're looking at center at the bottom of the first round. The Steelers may have to be concerned with taking one of these guys before him. So if you drop down, say, a couple picks and maybe grab another third or fourth round pick so that we can address maybe another need later on, I'd feel more comfortable taking Frazier in that 25, 28 range. Mm-hmm. Compared to at 20.
So let's say we get to draft day, first round, pick 20. Powers Johnson's on the board. So is Frazier. Barton's on there. Your tackles, Guyton, Mims. And if they draft one of these tackles, a Fontenot and Fuaga, I'm in trouble because I already struggle with that. But if all these guys are there at 20, who are you taking? If you're putting yourself in the position of being the con artist here with Andy Weedle, there I go with the pronunciations again. Who will they take?
I mean, it's going to be hard to pass up Amarius Mims with his ceiling. But if Talese Fuaga is on the board at 20, that's my guy. I think he's one of the most pro-ready to start. Just an absolute mauler in the run game. And if you go back and watch the tape against UCLA, going up against Leatu Latu from UCLA, who's one of the best pass rushers in this class, that was an epic showdown of two quality players that are coming in the draft. So Talese Fuaga, if he's on the board at 20, I think you go turn that card in immediately and be happy with what you have at right tackle. So
I've seen highlights of Fuaga just pushing, what's his name, Latu?
Yep.
Pushing him off the screen from that game. But did Latu beat him? Because yep. Fuaga has some question mark about his pass protection, at least as a rookie.
Yeah, he has a little bit less length than what you would like at right tackle, but he still has that power aspect that I want to see in this offense. I think he would be the best asset to start early on. If you're going for this, yeah, if you're going for that ceiling, you want Mims.
Okay.
Yeah, and Fuaga, a big dude, 6'6", 324, so pretty massive guy. Let's switch.
You know what though? He's too mean. I've seen him hurt people. That it's just unfair. Like there was a Penn State linebacker I saw. I mean, he could have just blocked him. He didn't have to gore him and hurt him.
I think we kind of like that though, Jim. You like the ass kickers.
I'm kind of being weak and passive and funny.
Well, you're always funny. So, but weak, I don't know if that'd be a word that I would describe you as.
Well, gentlemanly. I mean, let's not compete anymore. Let's just contend.
Yeah. Everybody
let's
get
do
a
it.
Trophy. We're just competing. It's fine.
That's it. So let's shift gears and talk about wide receiver, because that's the other position that the team definitely needs to address in the draft. Potentially could get done in the first round as well, but more likely in the second or third rounds. Got a lot of guys out there that have been being rumored to the team. I saw that, and I'm going to mess this one up too. Adonai Mitchell came
Adonai.
In for a visit. Adonai?
Adonai.
Adonai.
Do they call him AD?
Yeah, they can call him AD, but his name is Adonai. So if you want to call him AD.
Let's go with AD, yeah. Jeremy.
All right, AD. There we go. Makes it simple for me. But just out of all these prospects, who jumps out to you, and who do you have on the board here for the Steelers?
Listen, there's one player, if we're going to go up for in this draft, if we're going to be really concerned about the receivers, it's Roma Dunze from Washington. You're not going to get him outside of the top 10 picks, though. It's going to be hard to be passed up at 9. Roma Dunze, though, is an absolute monster of an X receiver. Physical, can break the jam at the line of scrimmage, a great blocker, Plays above the rim, strong hands, quality deep speed. You know, getting across the field laterally, he can gain separation. He has a disciplined route tree, so he can run all the routes. High quality player, and you know, I don't throw comparisons around, you know, of Hall of Famers around easily. I think his ceiling is Larry Fitzgerald, the way he plays above the rim. This guy is going to be a stud.
If you're going to trade up for a wide receiver, he better be a Hall of Famer.
Yeah.
You know, because there's a lot of wide receivers, and it shouldn't be a position they have to, you know, spend a first and a third on, or first and a second.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm with you, Jim. That's just the guy I wanted to highlight if we go up. For me, though, if we're staying at pick 20, Brian Thomas is a guy you're going to have to be a conversation with. Big-time athlete, ran a 4.3, I believe, 8, 6.4, led all of college football with 17 receiving touchdowns. To me, his play style reminds me of Martavis Bryant, just a freak athlete and the movement skills of a guy that big. He was one of Jaden Daniels' go-to targets here. At 20, he'd be a steal.
Some of the criticisms I've read about him, though, are he needs to go full speed on every route. I mean, you're going to have two guys that don't go full speed out there, him and Pickens?
I mean, that's a credited claim. I can't combat that, Jim. It's going to be one of those things. But all receivers in this draft have some questions. So it's hard for me. At first round, I'm not taking a receiver. I'm just trying to make the case for some guys.
Okay, no, because I think Thomas is the only valid guy at 20 who you might consider over one of the tackles, because you don't really have a dying need to tackle a plan to put that together. But you have a big need at wide receiver. So I think Thomas might be the only guy that fits. And if he's not going to run, if he's not going to play hard, if it's an attitude thing or if it's something else, is he setting up, you know, because I've also seen him sometimes – move slowly, like he's mad because the ball's not coming to him, and then blow by the corner on a deep and catch a deep touchdown.
Yeah.
So if he's using it as planned, I mean, you would have to get a guy to talk to him, find out what kind of timber he has, because these wide receivers that are you know, problematic.
Right.
I've had about enough of them, especially a first rounder.
And that's exactly right, Jim. Anytime you select a guy in the first round, you almost think that you're going to have that attitude kind of question come about just because of the athleticism that it takes for you to rise above the rest of these receivers. Because over the last 5 years, the tendency is we've had some of the best receiving draft classes in the last maybe 10, 15 years because of how much passing game is in the college football programs. And if you're looking for value, you always try to target in the second to third range. These guys have that skill set. They have some of the athleticism, but they also have the work ethic behind it. They're not afraid to maybe give up the targets and also compete as a blocker more compared to these guys in the first round who may have that little bit more of a diva-esque, flag to them.
Okay, good. So second or third, that makes more sense to me, and I get a better character in the locker, right? Okay,
absolutely.
So who are the guys that you would target as second and third rounders for a team that needs a starting outside guy? Now, I know some of these guys are slot guys, like Malachi Corley's a slot guy. Roman Wilson might even be a slot guy. Do you really consider a slot guy, or do you need a big outside guy?
I would prefer an outside guy just because I want that physical, blocking ability in there. I want that dominant guy that I can go to on third downs that's going to move the chains. We need a guy like that for Russell Wilson or Justin Fields, whoever's going to be the quarterback under center this year. And a guy like Xavier Leggett from South Carolina is the guy that I've been targeting in the second and third rounds, depending on how it falls. Five-year player, really didn't break out until this year, but he's really physical after the catch. He runs his routes angrily, great hands, had more deep speed than what I thought whenever he ran his 40 time. He ran a 4.39, I believe. But a physical guy at South Carolina that went through the throes of maybe coming out as a, I believe he was a four-star recruit, didn't produce he's first also, couple years.
He's also a fifth year player that's only had one good year.
Yeah.
That doesn't concern you?
No, not at all. Especially in the SEC with the amount of talent you get in five-star recruits every season. That doesn't concern me when you're taking a second or third round. Now, if you're talking about that in the first round, absolutely, that concerns me. because second, third round guys, I want to have that dog in them. I want them to have that ability to rise above maybe a little bit of, you know, things that maybe put me back on my chair or on my stool that I had to work for it. So he's a guy I really like in that second, third round range. Would think he would be a quality asset opposite George Pickens. Maybe that would rub off a little bit on Pickens as well.
What about Jeremy's guy, AD? He seems to be the highest ranked receiver they've had in. I mean, he seems more just going by the visits. He seems more suited for that second round pick. What do you think about him as the second rounder there?
AD, I wasn't as impressed with him at Texas as I was as his Georgia tape. Texas seemed like they kind of let him freelance a little bit more. He, to me, has a little bit of them diva tendencies where he lets up on his routes and stuff. You don't see him blocking as well. When he was at Georgia early in his career, you've seen him fighting into the blocks. You've seen him running his routes to the full extent, no matter if the ball was coming his way or not. So if you're talking about A.D. Mitchell, I love the upside. He has every box you want, whether it's length, speed, you know, agility. He has quality hands, good route tree. He understands how to get in and out of breaks. But there's some concern there with me, as we were talking about before, with the diva-esque tendencies. I wouldn't be comfortable taking him. I don't think he's going to drop to the second round. If he does, I'll be surprised. I think he's a guy that you might see Kansas City take a chance on at the end of the first.
The problem with him, as I see it, is he's not a big yak guy. Really doesn't break tackles like Thomas and Leggett, you know, those guys, those big, strong outside guys. He seems to go down fairly easy.
Yeah, he's one of them guys where he's like, he's built like he should be breaking those tackles, but he's not. And that's one of the concerns I have wrote down in my notes is the upside's there, but he didn't seem like he was motivated enough at Texas like he was at Georgia. If you go back and watch some of his Georgia tape, it just seemed like some of those leaders on that offense were in his ear and making sure that he was taking care of business.
Pickens was probably taking care of him there, you know, getting him to work hard.
You know. I was going to say, we don't need another Georgia receiver, even though he didn't finish his career there. But let's bring this home, Roy, and let's talk about quarterback in the running back position, maybe even throw tight end in there. You know, with the moves that they've made this offseason, bringing in some veterans at the position at quarterback, still potentially on the table, but not until later rounds. But then also running back. Could they bring someone in to complement Najee and Jaylen Warren?
Yeah, that's, to me, it's hard to invest a pick in either one of these, being all the moves and the quality talent we already have. Joe Milton's a guy I really like, but I'm convinced maybe somebody takes a chance on him in the fourth, fifth round, thinking they can fix him because you don't have that type of arm strength to not, you know, get eyes put on you. But a guy that really intrigues me, if we're looking in the sixth round for some depth, maybe, is a guy, Carter Bradley from South Alabama. He put on a really quality display in Mobile against, you know, against the border of all these SEC players and Big Ten players. He has a live arm. He's able to have some escapability, can progress through his reads. Just didn't really get a chance to show it against some big programs. And he has the bloodlines of the NFL. He is the son of Gus Bradley, the defensive coordinator. So he's a guy I kind of target maybe in that late sixth, seventh round if we would have to go up or get an undrafted, if he would pull out there. So I really like Carter Bradley. As far as running back, to me, I mean, it's all going to depend if what my thoughts are on Najee, if I'm going to exercise that fifth year. If I'm going to exercise his fifth year option, I'm really not selecting a running back outside of the sixth round or maybe as a priority free agent. A guy like Dylan Johnson, who they brought in for a visit from Washington, is more of a big, burly power back. You can maybe bring him in late in the process here of the draft, or maybe a guy like Kamani Vidal from Troy, who's only 5'7", but he's like 218, solid guy in pass protection, would be a quality third asset on the depth chart here.
On Najee, if they don't give him that fifth-year option, they must have a plan to extend him, because I think they really like him, and they want him to work. So I don't see them needing a running back, and except, you know, a third guy, maybe, because Cordarrelle Patterson's there.
Right.
What about Bo Nix or Penix at 20?
I'm not a fan of Bo Nix whatsoever. I don't think his game's going to translate that well outside of maybe in Denver. Michael Penix is interesting, but I think them bringing him in for a visit is more of the smokescreen. If he's still available at pick 20 when we're on the clock, maybe you convince one of these teams that missed out on quarterback early on in the draft to come back up, and we can, you know, get that in a draft trade exchange here. I don't think we're really in the market for Michael Penix. He's too much of an injury history and an older prospect. I mean, why would you take a chance on that guy in the first or second round when you have Justin Fields, who's younger than him or right around the same age, and has way higher upside, in my opinion.
Okay, interesting. Good stuff.
Great stuff. And we have covered quite a bit. And listeners, viewers out there, I'm sure that you are now well-educated on the offensive side of the football in terms of the draft prospects. Roy, we want to thank you so much for coming on here today. And we'll probably, Jim, I know last year we did the thing where it was Roy, Matt was on, Shane, and we did the mock draft. Maybe you could be part of that. We can all do that together here. We'll have to talk offline. That was fun.
We'll see. We'll definitely have Roy on to go over to defensive. He's doing a series, and his offense concludes tomorrow with the offensive line. I'll have that up early in the morning. And then I assume, Jeremy, you'll have this tape done, and we can put that up tomorrow morning at the same time. So hopefully, Roy, the things you said today on this podcast are the same things you wrote.
I try to keep in line. I have my own big board here. I try to work off for all my articles. I'm in the process of updating it for my final big board for Big Country Scouting and for all my articles and stuff. So I'm in the final process of doing the final tweaks to put that out before the draft. But
you do
trying my best
job
to keep everything in line here.
And awesome. Your Big Country check should be arriving in the mail any day.
I appreciate you, Jim.
Make always. Sure. Hey, you know, that was a lot of calculating for me, so make sure it's right. Just if it's not right, it's only because I made a mistake.
Not a problem, buddy. I don't worry about them things.
No, I know. I know.
Awesome. Awesome.
Jeremy, good quarterbacking job today.
Thanks. Jeremy, hey, thanks a lot. I'm exhausted. I need a drink of water. Anyway, that's going to do it. Yeah, that's going to do it for episode number 104. We will see you back here next week for 105. Make sure you hit that like and subscribe button, share with your family and friends, leave a comment, and we will see you next week for the next episode of the Steel City Insider Podcast. Have a great week, everyone.
Thanks, Roy. Take care, guys.
Thank you, guys.